Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means it's episode 192 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast, brought to you by the Bald Move Network. I am one of your hosts. My name is Eric Walquist, and joining me this week is the other host with the mostest. His name is...
I'm Jesse Wilson.
Jesse, how you doing, buddy? How's your week?
I'm fine. It's just Tuesday.
I know.
It's this week already is feeling long to me.
Me too, man.
So that's cool.
It's real cool. How did you have a good weekend?
Sure.
I played a doubleheader of softball. I need to tell you. I did tell you about this. I saw you this weekend.
Yeah, you did, briefly.
Yeah, this week is feeling long, because I feel like we hung out like a week ago.
Yeah, that was the day before, the day before yesterday.
Yeah. So anyway, the guys on my softball team, Friday night, decided we're going to have a guys' night out, because all the ladies on the softball team decided they were going to have a ladies' night out. Since a lot of us are married to each other, we decided, why don't we have a guys' night out as well?
A lot of you guys are married to each other?
Yeah, you know, it's legal now in this state, so.
Cool.
You know, last week we were talking about the whole polygamy thing. I'm a free love, forjoner? Is that a word?
I think it's called 420.
There it is. So anyway, all the dudes decided that we were going to, do something. And I was like, okay, well, we could go down to Ballard. We could do beer, some bar hopping, have some beers, maybe go to somebody's house, play some board games. But, somebody on the softball team was like, no. We got to do something different. And I was like, okay, you got any ideas? And he was like, laser tag. So we drive down to Federal Way to go to the closest laser tag place near Seattle. And we walk in and literally everyone is 8 years old.
For those of you who don't know, Federal Way is like a good like half hour outside of Seattle.
It's a half hour trip.
It's not close.
We had to carpool. We show up and it's like a bunch of children.
Yeah. And, did you carpool in your mom's van?
No, we carpooled in my friend's SUV, which could be a mom SUV.
Close
for
enough.
Like a ritzy mom. Yeah. So anyway, we're driving down there and, full of children. Luckily, we had a reservation.
Good. Thank God.
So like everything in this, I did not realize that this stuff still exists. And maybe you have a better handle on this, Jesse, since you have a little one.
But you know, my year and a half year old, 1.5 year old loves laser tag.
No, I'm not talking about laser tag. I'm talking about this weird, I don't want to call it a fabric, but there's like this, there's this substance that they covered all the furniture on that is like a plastic, but it's like a super hard, like sticky plastic that I think the things at the mall, like the kids play area at the mall is made out of. It's like shiny.
Oh, it's vinyl, right?
I guess it's like a weird vinyl. So everything's covered in weird vinyl.
Right.
There's a step up.
Easy to wipe is the thought process.
Easy to wipe. There's a step up to get to the to get to the cash register to pay. Like a step stool. So we get in there, we get our little tags, and I play a little arcade basketball, which I owned. Then we go.
Because you can just like lean forward 45 degrees and place them in the basket.
Yeah, I call it more like an arcade slam dunk contest. So anyway, we finally get in there. Luckily, we were in at like the 8 o'clock hour. So a lot of the 8 year olds leave. Now it's mostly 12 year olds.
Oh, good. And more akin to your age level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're literally 4 years closer to my age level. Still less than half my age, but they are a lot easier to shoot at. Like, there were a couple of smaller kids in the laser tag arena.
You mean like it's physically hard to shoot them, or you have like the emotional restraint?
You have the emotional restraint. You like pop around the corner, COD mode, and point a laser rifle into the eyes of a 4 year old child. And you do shoot them, but you just feel bad about it. You feel a little bad about it. So anyway, we all decided, we are all like around 30 years old. So we decided we needed to stay together. So we like teamed up tactical style and basically camped the whole time and just shot kids as they ran by. And, you know, when I showed up to the laser tag place, I started cracking up because not only did it smell really strongly of cheese pizza, not only did it have two broken air hockey tables.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But I was like, this is ridiculous, guys. I don't even know if we should be here. But by the end of that, I was like, dude, I want to do laser tag every week. And the reason being is that they hand you a nice stat sheet at the end of the night. And the stat sheet is like the key to laser tag.
Yeah, I did see your scorecard.
Yeah, because it shows you everybody that you shot, how many times you shot them, where you shot them, back, front, shoulders, or gun. It also shows everybody who shot you where they shot you. Then it has like your KD, or it doesn't really have your KD, but it has your accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And God, it just makes you want to like keep playing just to get like your stats up. It's also really fun. I called it the centipede. We would all get in a line and go through the maze and just shoot people as much as possible. And then like if one of us gets shot, the other person, that person drops down. The person behind shoots the person who shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great.
So it's like a Swedish mile in reverse.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I don't know what a Swedish mile is.
The Swedish death march. It's like in running where. Mm. Say you have like six people and you all run in a line.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're in the back of the line, you have to sprint to the front.
Right. Yeah.
It's good times.
So anyway, laser tag, I now have a membership. And I'm just joking. Although the membership was $10 and it knocks $2 off every game.
$10.
There were two kids. Their names were Ninja and Riot because you got to put a code name in when you went into the arena. And they were both, I would say, they were a little older than most of the kids. They were about 14. But they destroyed everyone every game. Like, those are two kids with memberships.
Right. It would be great if, like, you guys, you do start going regularly. You're, like, 30 crew, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Riot and Ninja, like, get upset. And then it turns out their dad is like a Navy SEAL, so right. He gets like all his SEAL buddies.
We actually talked about this. Like, it would be great to make like a movie about a bunch of 30-year-olds who go right. into a like it's gotta start like Will Ferrell who go
Tom
into
Arnold.
Who go into a laser tag league against a bunch of 12-year-old kids, and how it just escalates into like basically Navy SEALs fighting each other.
Yeah, I love it.
Anyway, laser tag happened this weekend, so
I want like laser World War One with like trenches,
yeah, biplanes,
like, yeah, and like bolt action rifles and mm-hmm. like laser bayonets.
Oh God, the lasernets,
bayonet charges,
yeah,
that's what I want.
Well, there you go. Kickstarter is open. For your ideas. Anyway, Jesse, what are you drinking this week?
Free beer from work.
Nice. I'm drinking the Pike Place Pale Ale. It's actually the Pike family-owned Seattle Brewing Company Pike Pale.
Yeah, their ale. Labels are confusing as fuck. Because it's like, they're the Pike... They're Pike Brewing Company, Seattle Brewing Company. They say like yeah. Pike Brewing Company and Seattle Brewing Company on each label.
Family owned the Pike Seattle Brewing Company.
Right, it's weird. Like, is but they're it Pike located, or like is a, it Seattle Brewing Company?
I always thought it was Pike Place, because they're like in Pike Place Market.
Yeah, they are.
Anyway, that's what I'm drinking. It's serviceable, and it was cheap at the store, so that's what I'm drinking it. Let's get on to some listener feedback this week. We got a couple voicemails. First one comes to us from Virginia. Here it is.
Hey, Michael from Virginia here again. I just want to let you all know that, Dwight had a large listen to the news of the Firefly, reemerge was, if you look at when it was posted, it wasn't by an exec whose name was April Fools spelled backwards, so it wasn't really even a real person from Netflix, but there was some talks they're saying that it's a possibility, but it's not even gonna probably even happen anytime soon. If it does happen, by the time it probably happens, it'll probably be the point where, oh yeah, all these people are too old to even do this, so yeah, that's how I feel. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I have to agree with Jesse. I had to agree with Jesse when I first heard you talk about that, Eric. I just thought it was kind of crazy. But just figured y'all wanted to know the truth. All right. Guys, stay off my back.
Stay off my back, Michael. Yeah, apparently, so the front of the message got a little garbled there, but I posted a thing online that said that Firefly is coming to Netflix after Joss Whedon does the next Avengers movie, and apparently I just fell for a big ol' hoax.
Josh, sure it will.
Josh Wilson, not Joss Whedon.
Yeah, that's a different guy.
Josh Wilson's Firefly is about summers in country catching fireflies in mason jars.
Yeah, it's a lovely novella.
Mm-hmm. It's coming to the Hallmark Channel.
I didn't know they played books on the Hallmark Channel.
Oh, they do.
That's, okay.
It's so much cheaper than making Hallmark original movies. They just now do audiobooks with slideshows from your grandma's most recent vacation.
It's not even an audiobook. It's their response to the popularity of e-readers. They just show one page on the channel, and then after 30 seconds, the next page, and you just sit there and read it.
Are the pages going by too fast for you? Why don't you invest in the Hallmark DVR? You'd be able to pause pages and go back. Oh, man. I can't believe I fell for it. I thought it sounded plausible. I mean, they did that with Arrested Development. They brought it back 10 years later.
I wouldn't be super surprised if it happened, but, right. Like, Joss Whedon went through an effort to, like, destroy the series when he made the movie.
Mm.
Because he, like, wrapped up the loose ends he wanted to wrap up, he left vague the things he wanted to leave vague, and he killed half the cast.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to watch it without Wash.
That's true, man. Oh, I totally forgot that Wash is dead. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, for that movie that came out in 2004.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a bummer, man. We got one more message, and here it is. Whoa.
Eric and Jesse, what's that noise? That's money. Money for you guys. Not 4% to Amazon. Not Etsy. It's money for you. Get a Donate Now link. Do it.
Apparently that noise was money for us. It got a little garbled there.
Ka-ching,
but, ka-ching. Yeah, ka-ching, ka-ching. Apparently people want to give us money. And I feel a little weird about this because I've never asked for money on this show before. And I guess we've been doing it now for 4 years for free. We put out, like, weeks of content at this point. And I guess when people listen to that, some of them would like to give us a little bit of coin. So, of course, there's the Etsy store. So, Jesse, can you drop that URL one more time?
Yeah, Etsy.com/shops/ Rosavina Pottery.
Right. So we have the Rosavina Pottery site for Jesse, and we are going to figure out some ways to get to allow you to donate to us if you feel so inclined. If you don't want to give us any money, don't worry about it. You can still get our stuff for free. But if you feel the inkling to support the show and keep it going, we will have those opportunities hopefully up for you very soon. So just
I call it the cha-chinkling.
Cha-chinkling. It's an inkling, but it has to do with the cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
Yeah. So, yeah. I feel like we've actually had this idea in the works for quite a while of ways to monetize this podcast, and I feel like if I say it on the show, then I have to do it. So I'm saying it on the show. We're going to set this up. So, anyway, that's coming up, and that's listener feedback for this week. Jesse, you want to do a little tiny minute roll-off?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, let's do it. We're each going to roll a 20-sided dice, see who gets to talk first on the podcast this week. And here we go. What'd you roll?
I rolled an 11.
I rolled a 9. This is the exact opposite of last week.
Oh, boy.
Jesse, congratulations on winning. I thought you were turning into the Mariners there for a while.
I'm not that big of a loser.
All right, Jesse, what's your first topic?
I want to talk about beer. Question mark?
Yeah.
All right, Eric. Uh-huh. Imagine you're mixing your own cocktail without using a cocktail shaker or pouring any liquor.
Sounds like my kind of deal.
That's the idea behind Palcohol, a new powdered alcohol product that will be headed to a store near you this fall.
I love that this topic was like, we had multiple listeners be like, you have to talk, like, people heard about this and were like, these people have to talk about this thing.
That's how I heard about this, was from the listeners.
Multiple people.
So ask and ye shall receive.
Blown us up.
About 5% of the time.
Yeah.
So there's going to be 6 varieties of palcohol, which I guess, it's spelled P-A-L, like, just alcohol with a P at the front. So it's like, it's your pal, or is it supposed to be like it's in a pouch?
I believe it's powdered alcohol. I believe it's an amalgamation of those two words.
Or powdered alcohol.
It's like the Corona. Yeah.
Right. So there'll be 6 varieties of alcohol, which according to the website include V, made from vodka distilled 4 times and then powderized, I guess.
Ugh.
R, made from Puerto Rican rum.
There you go.
Cosmopolitan Mojito Powderita. It's like, why? Okay, now we're throwing in the powder puns. And lemon drop.
No,
each individual
really,
pouch.
they couldn't come up with Puerto Rican rum.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that one just falls in your lap.
I'm not sure that there is a nation named Puerto Rico, though. So,
well, I doubt it's really Puerto Rican rum. I mean, Puerto Rican rum. I'm guessing it's probably like Oklahoma rum.
Right. Great blues musician, by the way. So each individual pouch of powder is the equivalent to 1 shot of alcohol. So Palcohol founder Mark Phillips, who is the author of the book Swallow This, The Aggressive Approach to Wine, said, imagine a regular margarita on a counter.
I'm doing it.
Now imagine if you could snap your fingers and the margarita margarita, I just made one up there. The
margarita, I like it.
The margarita turns into powder. That's what alcohol, palcohol is. Without the magic.
What a great, what an amazing description that is. I literally had no idea what powdered alcohol was until I heard that description.
Yeah. It's like a margarita, except it turned into powder.
So cocaine?
The powdered cocktails are meant to be mixed with water to create a cocktail. And the V and R can be combined with a mixer such as cola or orange juice for traditional mixed drink. This is just like, this is just grown-up Kool-Aid.
Yeah, what about the powdered beer?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's going to be down the line, but that sounds absolutely disgusting.
It does sound disgusting, but walk with me for one moment here, Jesse.
Okay.
The moment I heard about the powdered alcohol, the thing that I thought was that, oh my God, it's going to be so much cheaper to go to sporting events. Because I'm not buying the $8 beer. I'm buying the 20-ounce Coke and dropping some Puerto Rican rum in there.
But, I mean, there's already airplane shooters, guys.
I know, but this isn't even the shooter. I mean, you can literally hide like 50 packets in your tidy whities.
You're going to die.
You could hide 50 packets in your Walter White tidy whities.
Yeah, that's true. If you want to die.
Well, I mean, you could drop a couple of those into the Puerto Rican rum into your Coke. It's delicious.
Yeah. No, I get it, and I think that a lot of people are thinking the same thing when it comes to this. I guess my big reservation is, like, I consider alcohol a very bad way to get high.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of drugs, like, taking a substance to get altered.
Right.
Like, alcohol is a very primitive and not a good way of doing that, so, like,
it's not. And it's also, it takes, the thing about alcohol is that it's hard to drink a lot of it at once. Like, your body will reject it if you try to drink too much at once. And that's why, honestly, that's why I like to drink beer. After the whole laser tag night, we went out for drinks, and somebody on the team bought everybody shots. I took one shot, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is like so much alcohol."
Yeah, I don't do shots anymore.
No, I don't. I can't remember the last time I did a shot before that. Like, I drink beer because I can. It's easy to moderate yourself when you're drinking beer.
Last time I did a shot, it was around New Year's, and there's a welder who has a shop across from the brewery, and he was like, I got some Crown Royale, you guys, like, me and the head brewer, like, you guys should come over and take a shot sometime.
Yeah.
So, like, we wandered over there, and this guy, like, he listens to, like, the classic rock station and smokes inside his shop that has, like, it's like the entire shop walls are covered in grime,
right.
And there's, like, all this, like, fumes and stuff in there. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing this. I took a shot at Brown. I was like, I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate doing that. I don't know why I thought that would be anything close to pleasant, but no.
Well, I also did the problem. Like, I didn't go down the hatch when I drank it. I for some reason, sloshed it around my mouth before I swallowed it.
Because he wanted to savor.
Yeah, I'm drinking like a beer. And, like, come on, dude, I'm 28 years old. Like, I should know how to take a shot. But it's just too many years since college. Like, I completely forgot how to take a shot.
No,
and then, like,
it is not a linear progression in shot taking. It definitely reaches its peak around, like, 22, and then it tapers off hard.
I remember my first day at college. It was at San Diego State University. And so I went out to this party, and it was like a frat party, and these dudes, you know, they're trying to get pledges. This guy poured me a shot that was like four or five shots in one shot glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 18 years old. I just downed the whole thing in one thing and didn't even feel a damn thing. If I did that today, I would go immediately to the emergency room and I'd be hungover for like 3 days.
Thank you for the shot. Will you now please call an ambulance?
Like, even when I took this shot, I immediately had to walk outside and get some fresh air.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Yeah. It has dropped way off for me, and I'm okay with that. And that's why this alcohol thing is like, I don't consume alcohol because I want to get fucked up. Mm-hmm. If I want to get fucked up, I'll do something else.
No.
I consume alcohol. I drink beer because I love the taste of beer. I drink mixed drinks because I love mixed drinks.
Right.
And I appreciate the craft and everything that goes into it.
Yeah, that's true. Because you even drink cocktails. Like, I'm not a big cocktail drinker, but you do cocktails.
Well, I drink the odd cocktail.
But you make a martini, or you can savor a good, you know, whiskey.
Right. I like spirits straight up more. But then I know that flies in the face of my whole talking about not liking shots, but I'll like sip on a whiskey rocks for an hour and a half.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that flies in the face of downing in the like if I want to drink a hard alcohol, I want to drink it over an hour with ice, and I want to pay for the night for the good stuff.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
I don't want the $4 down the hatch rubbing alcohol.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes. So. Regarding, I've had too much palcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the palcohol, this article says there's concerns regarding people snorting the product and smuggling it into areas where alcohol is not allowed, and address this with a simple statement. Our concern is to promote the responsible and legal use of the product.
Well, yeah, that makes
but
sense.
But snorting it? Guess what, guys? Okay, you snort certain drugs because of, like, the whole blood-brain barrier thing. Like, if you drink a couple shots, like, you're going to feel it soon.
Right.
You don't need to snort it to, like, get it fast.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You don't need to drink alcohol faster. That's not, like, the problem. People aren't like, oh, my God, I wish I could get drunk quicker. Like, there are ways to do that. That's the thing I'm concerned about this stuff is that I don't know how, like, it metabolizes in your body, but, like, I feel like this is, like, a slippery slope to ingesting a lot of alcohol and then not understanding how much you've ingested until it hits you all at once, and then you have alcohol poisoning.
Right.
I mean, I guess that's the main concern that pops in everybody's head when they think about this product.
Right. It's just, like, alcohol is supposed to kind of revulse you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, is this going to be just pure, like, you can just drink it and you won't even know? Because that's super-duper dangerous.
Yeah, does it still taste like vodka? Like, you know, even beer, like, if you drink too much beer, at least for me, if I drink too much beer, as I start drinking beer, it just starts tasting like straight alcohol. Like, it loses the flavor of the beer after a certain amount of beers.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
I don't get that at all.
I just start, if I get to the point where it's like, oh my God, I've had too much beer, I just start tasting. I mean, it's not like it doesn't overpower. Like, it's still drinking beer, but I get like a strong alcohol flavor for it. Like the alcohol flavor gets stronger and stronger for me.
That's got to be your body. Like, hey, remember. Yeah.
This is still alcohol, guys.
This is still poison, yeah. Buddy.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but like, why do people snort cocaine? Is it just like a convenient way to ingest it, or does snorting it make you higher faster?
I think the main reason why people snort it is because it comes in a powder form.
Right.
So, and you could snort it and not get a direct overdose like you can with like strong heroin, which you have to melt down and inject in your bloodstream. Like, but then they also have smokable cocaine, which is called crack cocaine.
Right, yeah.
Which, as far as I understand, also is a pretty quick high. from my crack smoking days.
Yeah.
Hanging
you
out
and
with,
Rob Ford.
Rob
buddies.
Ford and Marion Barry were hanging out in the mayor's club.
So, Palcohol is expected to be released nationally this fall. But they cannot release any pricing information just yet or comment on any other products in the works.
Yeah. Well, you know, so it's interesting because they have the corner on a market that, you know, they have a monopoly in this market right now, powdered alcohol. They obviously have a product that's gotten a lot of buzz, pun intended. And they want to get it out to the marketplace. Now, I've also read that they're going to probably run into a lot of legal barriers because there's different liquor laws in every state.
Right.
So it'll be very hard to get it into every – it'll take years before it's in every state. Weirdly,
yeah.
Though, in the article that I read, it was on NPR.com about this, they said that California already has laws in place for powdered alcohol products.
Oh, they're on the ball with that one.
Yeah, that and Google cars. It was part of the Google. It was a pork barrel bill on top of the Google card bill. Anyway, yeah, I think it's interesting. I can't imagine why you would want to snort this thing.
Yeah, that just seems silly. Because I mean, the blood-brain barrier, like alcohol, just goes right through it super fast. Anyway, so
they were talking about in the article though the company, which I believe is based in like Arizona or something. They were saying that. The margarita, the powderita mix in guacamole is actually kind of good, and it gives a little kick.
Yeah, I bet it does give a little kick.
Yeah, but that's really like the thing that I think is revolutionary here is I have been eating guacamole for years, and I've never gotten drunk off of it. And like, if I could finally get drunk off of guacamole or mayonnaise or any other product that you could dissolve this into. I think I'm ready for some powdered alcohol.
What would some other great things be?
Well, think about the alcoholic sandwiches. Put in the mayonnaise and mustard.
Mm.
This sandwich is 12% ABV, motherfucker. I'm sorry.
It's a P, B, and J, and ABV. An ABV and L and T.
I thought you were going to say a PBR and J.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, this could revolutionize Jello shots.
Oh God!
Ice cream.
That's true. I think that's probably the best application for this.
Well, why? I mean, Jello shots—they're doing just fine on their own. They don't need any help.
True.
I guess you could just mix it in with the sugar.
Ease of use.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, just the straight up like Kool-Aid plus V or whatever it's called. V for powderetta.
Good one. Now they can make like crunk brownies.
Mm-hmm.
Not just pot brownies anymore,
true.
Like pot and alcohol brownies.
There you go. Rum
that's
brownies.
That's what I'm excited for.
Yeah, that's the question. Does this it probably doesn't stick around if it's baked? I wouldn't think. I think it would still the alcohol would still dissolve. Or
well, not
whatever,
if it's
not
a
dissolve,
powder.
But. If you put the straight powder in, I guess. But, I mean, if you put it in a brownie mix and then bake it, it should evaporate out.
I don't think so.
I think it'll get stuck
up in there.
Betty Crocker's going to cramp it down?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Like the baking powder gets all stuck in there.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not excited about this product. It seems like it is the second coming of Four Loko. Me.
Yeah, no, that's what I think too. Like some freshman's gonna get blood alcohol poisoning in a Safeway parking lot, then this whole thing's going to get shut down, and they're going to have to, like, re-release it, like, with some sort of watered-down formula.
Yeah, they'll just use the Utah batch.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like, somebody is going to die. Like, that's basically the bottom line. Powdered alcohol is going to come out, somebody's going to die.
Sure, but you could say the same thing about airplanes, and that, you know, that changed the world.
There you go, man. You should be a alcohol lobbyist.
I think, you know,
you've immediately,
I've been thinking about changing careers, so
you've
maybe.
Immediately swayed me.
I could be, oh man, it would be awesome to be a lobbyist for alcohol industry.
Yeah, you probably make a pretty penny.
Mmm, I like it.
You're going to have to shave
Screw the
beard,
Small
though.
Brew Act. Sorry, JR from Philly.
Yeah, so I guess that's our thoughts. You got any other thoughts on alcohol?
I mean, we're both getting older. Mm-hmm. I'm getting to that point where, like, something... So, like, the perfect example, I think, would be the Double Down.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
Remember when KFC made a sandwich, but instead of, like, the buns, it was, like, chicken slices, like, chicken breasts for the... buns or whatever.
Yeah, two pieces of chicken.
And I was like, I gotta try that.
Gotta try it.
Because I was like 24.
Right.
Now that I'm a little bit older, something comes by and it's like, do I have to try this?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, the number one thing here is sporting events. I feel like if I can sneak a couple of packets of this into a Mariners game and put it in a $4 soda instead of an $8 beer and be fine, that seems like an advantageous thing to me. But I'm definitely not going to fun dip the alcohol like the college kids are going to do.
I think the way the Mariners are playing, the Mariner moose should just be throwing packets of alcohol into the stands like so much Roman bread at the Coliseum, like whatever it takes to get people here.
Dude, that's a question. If you put the Powderita mix into a Bud Light, does it become a Bud Light Lime with a little more kick?
I think so.
Major question.
Fortified Bud Light. That's not really Bud Heavy at that point.
Yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is like 3 weeks ago, I had a life-altering hangover. Like, I feel like there is, like, my life is split into two points. The point before I had this hangover and the point after I had this hangover.
It was a great schism of hangovers.
It was. And I think that probably most people go through this when they're around my age, is they have that hangover that tells them, no, you're not, you're too old now. You are too old to get completely plastered. It's not going to work anymore.
Well, I kind of got life's biggest reminder of the consequences of your actions in the form of a human being spawned off of me.
That's true.
I'm just saying children are life's biggest hangovers, really.
Oh, God. Oh, man. I guess that's probably true.
I love you, Russell Nisha.
I know you do, man.
I did the calculation. Since Russell Nisha was born, the Seattle Seahawks are 24-5.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. It's the red hair.
Yeah, I think so.
John Ryan, symbiosis. Anyway, powder alcohol. Alcohol. Do it
exactly.
Big. All right. Well, my first topic this week is going to be games.
Here we go.
All right, so this week, Jesse, did you ever play Cookie Clicker?
No.
I played Cookie Clicker.
Okay.
Did you hear about Cookie Clicker?
No.
I believe it's still up. You just gotta look for Cookie Clicker. It is a game in which you click a cookie, and you get a cookie every time you click a cookie. And then if you get enough cookies, you can buy other things that will click the cookie for you. So then now each time you click the cookie, you get 10 cookies.
Yeah, I actually have heard of this.
And then you keep clicking, and then you get grandmas, and you get cookie mines, and you get time machines that get cookies from other dimensions. And you get cookie factories. And then all of a sudden, you're making 1.5 million cookies per click.
Right.
Over the course of like 7 days. I played Cookie Clicker.
Did you put the powderica? What? Palcohol?
Mm-hmm.
In the cookies?
No, actually, powderica, I believe, is powdered paprika.
Which is just paprika.
Yeah, it was a bad product launch. But, no, yes. It was like I was on Palcohol when I was doing this, because I would literally, like, run Cookie Clicker overnight so that I could wake up in the morning and see how many cookies I had.
Mm-hmm.
And then spend them all. It got to that point. So
the cookies are also the currency?
Yes. So, yeah, the more cookies you have, then you can spend them on other cookie-creating things.
Because I don't think that's how the cookie production business works.
Well, kind of.
I don't
of.
Think they just, like, turn on the cookie machine, and then they're like, well, we made 1 million cookies, so now we have $1 million in cookies that we can just reinvest in more cookies.
I think that's actually exactly how cookie manufacturing works.
I'm just saying that there's some sort of point of sales and distribution level that maybe is being overlooked.
They do. They skip a step, but it's really the most boring step. Everybody just wants to make cookies.
I just want to be the big cookie lobbyist.
Also, after a while, demons start coming and then leeching your cookies from you.
Of course.
If you open because you can open a portal to another cookie dimension, which gives you a ton of cookies, but then, like I said, aforementioned demons come and then eat your cookies, and then you have to click them off of your cookie.
Mm. Rascally demons.
Yeah, so
Do you
anyway.
Play this on... So this is on your new... Samsung or Galaxy or whatever?
No. I played this like a few months ago. It's just a browser-based game.
Oh, okay. So you're actually sitting down at a computer to play this.
Yes. Well, you can let it run in the background.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway. So I play Cookie Clicker. Probably not one of my greatest moments. But anyway, the guys who made Cookie Clicker, obviously they know how to make a addicting game. Because Cookie Clicker is, if nothing else, addicting. And... it's questionably a game, but they did create this new thing. It is, I don't even know what it's called. It's called the Game Generator. And what this is, Jesse, is this is a word randomizer that spits out video game concepts as you click. So they can sound reasonable as long as your sanity button is checked, but then if you uncheck the sanity button, then they don't sound as reasonable.
That's very Lovecraftian.
It is. So, Jesse, I thought that maybe we could run through some of these contents and kind of some of these game concepts and kind of flesh them out a little bit.
Love it.
You ready to go?
Yeah.
Here we go. A browser game where you challenge shoes by answering questions.
Okay.
A browser game where you challenge shoes by answering questions.
Well, I think this should probably in some way incorporate MVP at Life, Jordy Hoyt.
Oh, I believe so.
Who sells shoes via browsers.
He does sell... It's basically his main job is he's a shoe salesman.
Right.
But I think I already have a name for this. I'm thinking more of like a game show concept.
Mm-hmm.
And so this
Choose your shoes.
I like it. I was thinking tongue and check. Because like there's like a tongue on the shoe.
Right.
And then you get a check at the end.
Oh, I thought you're like C-Z-E-C-H, and it's like the host is a Czech guy.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. No, tongue in Czech.
Uh-huh, so you challenge the shoes.
Shoes, by answering questions. So there has to be some idea where like shoes have become sentient.
Right, anthropomorphized shoes somehow.
Right, and I feel like there was a cartoon with anthropomorphized shoes. There was like a sneaker... Am I making this all up? I feel like this is like a remnant of like early 90s childhood.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Cartoon with talking shoes. It's in...
Know what we could do, though? Okay, I'm turning this concept on its head a little bit.
Uh-huh.
You've reminded me when you're talking about 90s shoes.
Show is called Hammer Man, and it was MC Hammer's cartoon and had talking shoes.
Wow. Okay. That's great.
Thank you,
so,
Google.
For one, that is great.
Yes.
For two, let's abandon the shoes the way you're thinking. I'm thinking of Carmen Sandiego.
Love it.
Gum shoes.
Got it.
So shoes is, you know, shorthand for gum shoes. And we have to challenge these shoes to win cash and prizes.
I love it. This is the questions that we... Oh, I guess we're answering questions, huh? We're not asking questions.
So the hostel, it'll be a little bit Beat the Geek. So the hostel asks questions, and these are real life, like CIA agents and like private investigators and stuff. But it's sort of like Gangland, where they have their face blacked out and their voice is all, you know.
Yeah.
Like
that way we can use the same three every week and just give them different names.
Yeah, and just change the pitch.
Just like Blind Date.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like it. And I like the idea you just present them a scenario, or you present them like a picture, and then you have to scan the picture and get the clues and deduce what happened. And if you can beat the gumshoes, then you challenge them. I like it.
And it's all based on real world stuff, like Edward Snowden and stuff.
There you go. All right. I think we got this one done. And apparently it all happens in your web browser. It's Skype based.
Tongue in check.
Love it. That still works. Okay. Sort of. Let's go move on to the next one here. A God game where you mutate trees to establish your brand. A God game where you mutate trees to establish your brand.
So this is like a post-apocalyptic eco-terrorist destroyed corporate America.
Uh-huh.
And so now all corporations, because right now we're like corporations are people.
Mm-hmm.
But in the future, corporations are trees.
Mm.
So unless you have a tree-based corporate structure.
Yeah.
Then you're not allowed to compete in the market. So you have to mutate your trees to try and meet the demands of the consumer.
I like it. I like it. I like the idea of trees becoming like sentient ants. I like sentience, I guess, or personification.
It makes it easier.
The thing that immediately sprung to my mind with this was a game like, you know, the classic Sierra title Dino Park Tycoon.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, Zoo Tycoon.
Yeah.
Very Zoo Tycoon-esque.
In which you have an orchard, but you have to mutate your trees to produce the product that is highest in the market right now.
Uh-huh.
So you have to corner the market by turning your orange trees into avocado trees.
Like iPads? Oh.
Yes, and iPads.
So you're still thinking, like, things that could grow on a tree.
Yeah, that's... Well, I mean, you could turn it, obviously we could turn it into things like Cookie Clicker where you go into a different dimension and create iPads on trees. I think I already have a name. I think I have a name for this now. It's called Money Does Grow on Trees.
I was just going to call it Apple.
I like it. Let's do one more and then I want to go on Insanity. So these are still the sanity ones.
Oh, these are the normal ones?
Yeah, these are the normal ones.
Oh, jeez.
This is the next one. A puzzle game where you control animals to unlock the next level. This one's pretty... I think this one's been done. There's like that new game, Escape Goat. You're technically controlling animals in that game.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on.
Sounds a lot like the Cajun Cooker or whatever your game was.
Burning Bayou. Yeah. All right, oh, this one's good. A tycoon game where you fix roads to dominate the market.
That's a lot of, like, capitalism-based ones.
Yeah, this is basically Pothole Tycoon.
I love that.
Yeah.
Pothole Tycoon.
You, like, have to go to a place with a lot of potholes, but you also have to strategically fix the potholes so that you don't... Because if you fix them too well, then you're going to work yourself out of a job.
Right.
This is all about not working too hard.
So it's basically the United States government.
Exactly. and guess who gets to fix all the potholes? All right, I'm going to turn off the sanity button here, Jesse. You ready for this?
I don't know. I'm scared.
You should be. A sim game where you lead the rebels in DNA and buy extra content with real money.
DNA and DLC.
Love. Perfect. DNA and DLC. We've got microbiology and microtransactions.
Say no more.
Yeah, I think
put a ribbon on that one.
Yeah. Up next, we got an adventure game where you throw doors to make a name for yourself. I like this one. I like this one as like a Japanese peripheral arcade game. You know, like they have those great arcade games. Like there's the one where you flip the table.
Mm.
Have you seen that game?
No.
I played it somewhere. There's like this game where you flip a table, and like depending on how hard you flip it, things happen in the arcade screen.
You played a game where you flip a table and you don't remember where you were when you were playing?
Don't. I feel like it was at like PAX East or something.
How much Palcohol were you on?
I was on a lot of Palcohol. Oh, God, where was that? I don't remember.
Are you sure that was a video game?
Might have been a fever dream. Might have been just a game of Catan that I was playing. and losing. No, I like that idea, except instead of flipping a table, you're kicking in doors.
Yeah.
Like, we were playing Dungeons and Dragons this week, and Lydia is playing with us, and she's playing a half-orc barbarian. Nice. And she decided to kick in a door to a bunch of sleeping lizard men when they could have, like, opened the door, snuck in. But she just, like, I love it. She's just, like, decided she's going to kick in every door she sees.
Barbarian style.
Exactly.
She's been playing too much Munchkin. That's the thing.
She hasn't played any Munchkin. We don't have Munchkin in my house. We do, but we never play it. All right, let's go one more insanity, and we'll move to trivia. A social media game where you acknowledge animals in the nads. You acknowledge... Okay, so this game has to be a dog nice to meet you game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a dog game, and you gotta go sniff the other dogs.
Oh, yeah. It's called Rad Nads.
Rad Nads.
You gotta Rad Nads, Chad.
It's like a Pokemon-esque game where you gotta catch them all.
Gotta sniff them all.
Gotta sniff them all. Red
there
nets.
Are Pokeballs still.
The Pokeballs are ultra rare, but you got to find them in order to collect them all. Collect all the scents. All right. I also like this is a social media game, so you're going to be posting on your timeline. Hey, guys, I need help with the Pokeballs. Oh, man. Well, this is kind of fun. You can find us at orteil.dashnet.org/gamegen.
Nice. Nice that URL.
That is the game generator. I had fun. Somebody could probably make a whole podcast off this. Just do this every week for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or 3 hours. Who knows? So anyway, that's my first topic. Jesse, let's go with some trivia. We're going to be doing Genius One of Trivial Pursuit this week. I'm going to roll a six-sided die to see which category we're doing. It is a two. It is entertainment, Jesse. You want to try to tackle this?
Nah, pass.
All right. Let's re-roll here. It's two again. It's a one, geography.
All right.
All right, Jesse, this question for you. Please play along at home. What man-made waterway is 100.76 miles long?
I'll go with Erie.
I'm going to go with Skerry. The Skerry Canal. Oh, it's a Suez Canal. God damn it.
I was gonna say, you didn't want to hedge your bet to go with the Suez.
Why? Why? Because I thought it was definitely the Erie Canal. Oh, man. What a dum-dum. All right. This question's for me. What two countries did Hadrian's Wall separate? I believe that is England and Scotland.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'll just say England and Wales. Or I'll go with... hang on.
Okay.
I'll go with the Roman Empire and the Celtic Empire.
I believe it would have been like the Britannic Empire. But I'm not sure. It's England and Scotland.
Oh, okay.
Jesse, this question's for you. What is the largest city in the communist world? Remember, we're playing Genus One of Trivial Pursuit here.
Yeah, so times have changed.
So what
good
was
question.
The largest city.
I know that Moscow's the largest city in Europe, but what about your Beijing's?
See, that's kind of what I was thinking, is that it's technically still communist.
Yeah.
So you say Beijing, I say, I'll go with Moscow. It is Shanghai. Dang it! Eric, hedge your bets! Ugh!
You're still winning.
Yep. This question's for me. You need the steal the tie. What country is the Dalai Lama's palace in? Dalai Lama's palace. Tibet is not a country. I'm going to say Nepal.
The Dalai Lama's palace. I guess I'll say China.
It's in Tibet.
Oh!
I don't think...
Balderdash.
Well, I guess Tibet's a place. Oh, it's a country. Is Tibet... Tibet's not a country, is it? I thought it got taken over.
I'm not sure when, but I thought that was, like, during World War One or something.
Yeah, these are, this is what you get when you play Genus One: A Trivia Pursuit. Pick it up at your local Goodwill for $2.99.
There you go.
All right, well, at least I didn't lose everything this week, Jesse, but you did win the roll-off, so what's your Seco Topo?
I got some science rapid fire.
If today we're able to create a two-headed dog with six legs, is it possible that a similar creature existed thousands of years ago? And I say yes.
Great stuff.
Great stuff lined up for you here.
Good.
Older Americans who regularly spend time online were about a third less likely to suffer from depression, a new study finds.
Where are they spending time online? Apparently not WebMD.
Oh!
Why is that? I'm just saying, anybody who goes to WebMD automatically starts self-diagnosing and then gets really spun up on that stuff. How do I know that? Personal experience.
Okay, it has nothing to do with the fact that they're old and gonna die soon.
Well, we're all gonna die soon on the cosmic calendar. Neil deGrasse Tyson's told me we're in the last 30 seconds of the last day.
Yeah. If you go back to just a week ago,
right,
on the cosmic calendar, you have the glaciers receding and blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
like a week ago.
If you go 1 millisecond into the future, it's your Nana's funeral. I'm Neil deGrasse Bummer.
If you go one millisecond into the future, it's your great-grandchild's funeral. That's the cosmic calendar realities.
That would be a creepy way to do that, but it would be pretty poignant.
It would be super poignant. It's like, welcome to your fleeting life. That's a new game show on the Shoe Network. Anyway, Jesse.
So yeah, spending time online and it eliminates isolation and loneliness and encourages interaction with others. And it can make old people not sad.
This is so interesting because apparently if you're old and you're online, you are being social. And if you're young and you're online, you're being antisocial.
That's true.
Yeah. Maybe old people just know where all the social websites are.
Maybe they're like getting nasty on the internet.
Probably. I mean, they got nothing to lose.
Yeah, I agree. Long before Antarctica became frozen tundra, it was a lot more like the coast of Northern California, according to two studies published this week. Appearing in the proceedings... Oops, I lost my thing.
I thought this was the same article, and you were just like going back to the cosmic calendar.
No.
Okay.
Anyway, the first study examines fossil shells collected from a small island off the coast of Antarctica. The shells have been linked to the Eocene epoch, a period 40 to 50 million years ago.
Not on the cosmic calendar.
By measuring carbon-13, oxygen-18 in the cells, the researchers determined that the temperatures were as high as 63 degrees Fahrenheit in some parts of the continent. That averaged about 57 degrees Fahrenheit. The water in that area of the Pacific Ocean was around 72 degrees, the same as coastal Florida's waters today.
Wait, so where is this? Alaska?
Antarctica.
Oh, Antarctica. Yeah.
So what they're saying is that this gives us an idea of what the weather was like in a period of time when there was much more CO2 in the atmosphere. So I'm guessing this must have been like before a ton of plant life on Earth, which was reabsorbing or absorbing that CO2.
Yeah, I mean, I saw something, you know, in that old the dinosaur show that used to be in the Discovery Channel where they were walking with dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm. They had like a whole segment. Before time.
Yeah, exactly. They had a whole segment where, like, the young brontosaurus's mother died. No, they had a whole segment where that was set in Antarctica. And they were like, this is the tropical climate of Antarctica. But I always thought that was just because it was in a different place.
Well, I think, yeah, there's also that because it's in a different place. But what they're saying is that CO2, like if you have a bunch of CO2 in the atmosphere, it affects the polar regions more than it affects the equator.
Huh.
Which is great because that's where we store all of our cold liquid or
yeah,
frozen
all of our
water.
Frozen water. Which I mean,
I don't know about anyone else, but I sure as heck don't live right next to the water.
Hey man, I live on the top of the hill. I think I'll be okay.
You'd be better off than me. I'd be screwed. I'd be
no,
a screwed.
You live on the top of
dude.
A hill too.
Yeah, I'm probably like 20, 30 feet above sea level.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine.
Okay.
I'm pretty
thank
sure
God.
The oceans are only supposed to rise like a few feet. But it will
screw
over
maybe...
places like downtown Seattle and New York City.
Yeah.
And San Francisco.
I can do without
and
this.
Boston.
Isn't San Francisco like all hills?
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about the coasts. The coastal regions.
Gotcha.
I don't really know though. I'm no Al Gore here.
So,
sorry to go on an allegory. Sorry.
The Supreme Court considered arguments around a tech startup that is capturing free over-the-air broadcast signals and selling them to consumers on the cheap without paying networks the hefty retransmission fees. So, this is Aereo. Uh-huh. Aereo captures free over-the-air TV signals with thousands of small antenna that are rented to individual users, and it transmits that content to customers online for a small monthly fee.
What do you mean by free? No, what do you mean by free? Like, are we talking like NBC?
I guess, but just whatever they can get over the air.
Yeah. What did this? Is the Supreme Court's listening to this, but they haven't ruled yet?
Yeah, they're supposed to rule like sometime in the summer.
Yeah, this is not going to fly.
You don't think?
No, because NBC is not a free network. Like, they pay for that bandwidth. I mean, this is a very interesting. I mean, this is me putting on my communications major hat. But the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of waves that are floating around the United States through the air. They're floating through you. They're floating through me, unless you're not in the United States. But they are floating through us right now. And you're able to hitch a ride. You're able to hitch a signal ride onto these waves to get them into people's houses. Now we know these, you know, as Wi-Fi. We know it as television stations. We know it as radio stations. But the interesting thing about these waves is since they are seen as American, they're like American space, right? So they're kind of like a piece of land. They are American space, and therefore they are owned by the people of America, aka the American government. So the American government leases these waves to broadcast networks in order to hitch the ride on them to send them into people's homes. So to say that they're free networks is kind of bullshit. They're free for the American people to have because they're going to pump a bunch of ads to us through them, but they are not free for the networks. The networks pay for those waves. And this isn't going to fly.
Yeah, the argument that they have here is if it's legal for someone to put bunny ear antenna on his roof and watch TV for free, and it's legal for him to record that free TV onto a DVR
for
so
himself,
he can watch it again later
For personal use.
Then does it matter from a legal perspective whether he actually owns that antenna or that he is in possession of a physical DVR?
It matters that if he decided that he was going to charge his friends for watching that, then that would be a problem.
Right. Yeah, it seems like
you
the
don't
thing
own
is,
the content.
They're,
he doesn't
yeah, they're
own the
redistributing
content.
It and charging a fee.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the part that doesn't really jive because they're making money off of what someone has created.
But my big question here is, what is their business model? Because if you're going to order, what is this company called?
Aereo.
If you're going to order an Aereo antenna, why don't you just order a Leaf antenna and hook it up to your TV like I do and get over-the-air signal?
Because, like, this way they distribute, like, everyone has one of these antennas in it. And it, picks up what it can pick up. But then you're actually streaming your content off of the internet.
Wow.
So, like, you might not be watching what you're picking up on your antenna, you might be watching what someone else is picking up on their antenna.
It's interesting, because you could call this a form of antenna.
I think that's the point, is that, like, this is an antenna, and it's like an antenna and a DVR, and you're just watching someone else's antenna.
Well, but it's almost like you're watching your own antenna. So if they, it's kind of like the Obamacare argument that went before the Supreme Court. They called it a tax, and therefore they were able to enact it by Congress, the penalty for not having health insurance. So if they called this service, this aereo service, a form of antenna, because I pay whatever company makes the leaf for their antenna. I pay a one-time fee to procure that equipment, put it in my home, and then I can now get these free broadcasts through it. If they say that you are buying a subscription to an antenna, much like you buy a subscription to your cable modem from Comcast or your DVR from Comcast, if you're paying for the equipment, like basically like an equipment rental, but it's a virtual equipment rental, that might be able to fly.
Right.
This is a little interesting. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit of a broadcast nerd, so maybe this isn't very interesting.
Or a podcast nerd.
I'm a podcast nerd, and I also really enjoy the judicial branch.
I don't quite know the nuances of the story.
Well, it's kind of how you package the argument.
But. Yeah, so it's obviously not as cut and dry, because it is making it all the way to the highest court in the land.
Absolutely.
So there must be some sort of legal debate about it.
And in the end, NBC still gets into your home, and they still get advertisements to you, and they still get paid for those advertisements, which is their number one source of revenue.
Right.
So they're still coming out ahead.
I think this is just this guy's way of, like, trying to circumvent the Time Warner Cable, Comcast, whatever's.
And I'm for that, man. Anything against cable is okay with me. I think cable is ridiculous. Don't get me started on cable.
Yeah, go for it. This was my last story, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, the main thing with cable is that, I hate Comcast because I only pay for the internet. And those of you who know the hiccups that we've had, the technical hiccups that we have, just going over a Skype conversation to record this podcast, the amount that I pay for this damn cable internet is egregious. However, right. I don't have any other option where I live.
Right.
I have to buy it from Comcast. That's called a monopoly, but apparently not because they can pay off politicians to call it not a monopoly.
It does suck when you're like, oh, in South Korea, their internet is 500 times faster than ours.
And then I lived in a city named Tacoma, Washington, who said, all right, we're not going to put up with this. And we're one of the few cities in the country that decided we are going to offer, because guess who lays all of the cable lines in a city? It is the city. They lay the cable lines and then they lease them to Comcast.
That actually kind of does surprise me.
Well, they do.
I thought it would be the cable company that would deploy the infrastructure.
No, they do the same thing with phone lines. I mean, all the phone lines that are run in cities and all the electrical lines, they own those. And there are a lot of municipal electric companies, but they lease those phone lines to other phone companies so that
phones
they can
have
use
lines
them.
Now.
I know. I feel like we're going to have all these phone lines and not know what to do with them in 50 years.
They'll retrofit them for something cool though.
They'll turn them into solar panels, or they'll just knock them down and then we'll have things called landscapes again. But
local area networkscapes.
I love it. Tacoma, they decided, okay, well, since we're leasing these lines to Comcast, why don't we also just use them for ourselves and create a public utility cable company? And it's called Click Network. And I don't understand, like, the subsidies must be so big from Comcast because they already got Seattle off of the fiber network that was supposed to move it, gigabit fiber. They got them off of there. But dude, like Seattle or any city should offer cable as a municipal resource. And the internet should be anything like, should be exactly as your, or should be seen exactly as your electrical bill. I pay Seattle City Light for my electricity. I should pay Seattle Municipal Cable for my cable. I don't want to pay Comcast. I would much rather pay the city that I live in.
I agree. It all comes down to competition is king.
Exactly. And guess what? If you did want Comcast in Tacoma, it's fucking cheaper because they have competition.
Yeah.
The rates were so low in the city because the municipality drove down the cost for everyone. So even if you didn't want to buy Click Cable, you could buy Comcast at a discounted rate. And you can't do that in Seattle. They're just going to gouge you. It's awful.
Mm.
And now, well, and now they're going to shut down my internet.
And that's the end of the podcast.
I guess so.
We are constructing a network of taut strings and cans to live cast to our dedicated listeners.
So. And then old ribbon microphones. It'll be halfway between the two.
Yeah.
It'll be perfect. Nice. All right, let's move on to my Sekotapo. It's another games topic. I'm not going to play the drop for games because it's actually about board games. Board games.
Here's Catan!
Is that a Chris Catan joke?
Totally.
Love it.
Do you? Okay.
What?
I really want to play Settlers of Catan with Chris Catan.
Oh my god, Catan on Catan.
There's a show.
All it is Chris Catan playing Catan with celebrities.
Perfect.
Oh, man. So I just want to talk a little bit, because I know I've talked about it. I've talked about it a little bit so far on the podcast, but I've been developing this board game, and I just kind of want to talk through kind of the process that I've been going through to this point. And it's interesting because I don't really know where this board game's going, but I've worked really hard on it, and and I need to kind of figure out what the next step should be. So I came up with this idea. I really wanted to make a board game because I've been listening to a lot of board game podcasts. I've been a board game enthusiast for a very long time, thanks to Jesse. You know, the first board game that I played, the first real designer board game that I played was Settlers of Catan Travel Edition in band class in high school.
Because, I was thinking about that because, like, yeah. Catan is almost 20 years old now.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, like, and I mentioned that to Tasha, and she's like, yeah, it's crazy that it's just become so popular in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I remember 10 years ago playing Catan Travel Edition in band class. Like, no one would have known what Catan was. If you asked the rest of the band class, who didn't directly know what we were doing.
Right.
Like, have you heard of this game? No one would have known, but now everyone knows.
Well, it's also interesting because a lot of, you know, board gaming as a hobby has exploded. Like, it's crazy big now compared to what it was a decade ago. And yet, there are people today who, you know, I cruise the board game Reddit from time to time. There are people today who are like, I don't really see the appeal of Catan. And it's like...
You gotta be kidding me, right?
Yeah. No, not at all. People are like... Yeah, they're like, I don't really understand why people like Catan. Like, I played it. I don't really like it. It's like, Catan is a seminal game. It is
it's one
reason-
of those perfect games, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The original Catan is a perfect game.
Like... Settlers of Catan is the monopoly of modern board games. It is a game that should be on everyone's shelf for the next 70 years. And I'm not saying Monopoly should be on everyone's shelf, but it was.
Right.
Right?
When no, I know what you mean.
When you get together for Thanksgiving, you should be playing Catan with your family. You know?
Yeah.
Like, Catan is a beautiful, beautiful game. And that I remember sitting there with those stupid little pegged plastic pieces in that tiny little board. And as I started learning the game, the wheels started turning in my mind, and I realized that all of a sudden board gaming is something so much bigger than Monopoly or Battleship or Jumanji, the board game that I owned as a child.
Like, yeah.
This is something that you can actually sit around and think about and have fun with your friends and strategize and you know, that sort of thing. What was the game for you that kind of opened that door? Because I know you were definitely on that bandwagon before I was.
I don't know. I mean, Catan is definitely there. I was in like 7th or 8th grade when I first played Catan. And I really enjoyed that and would play it with my extended family. So
yeah.
It could have been Catan. I used to play like Axis and Allies all the time, which isn't a great game by any stretch of the imagination, like Victory in the Pacific and like those old war games. And when I was young, it was just a little bit above my head, but then when, like, Catan and Carcassonne entered my sphere, that really changed it for me.
Yeah. So anyway, I've been a board game enthusiast ever since that happened, ever since the band room in high school. And so I decided I wanted to make my own game, and I had been playing a lot of Magic last year. I got really into the Return to Ravnica block, Which is weird, because, like, once that block ended, I haven't played Magic since. Like,
I haven't either. Sometimes you just gotta take a breather from MTG.
Yeah, and I feel like I got really crazily into Return of Ravnica. And because it followed everything that I loved about the fantasy genre in general. Like, I wouldn't call myself a huge fantasy fan, but the things that I love about fantasy and about especially gaming in fantasy is city stuff. Yeah. Like, my favorite D&D campaign was the one that I played with you and Levi, with you DMing and Levi in high school, where we were in a city and I was Algork the Half-Orc.
Right.
Like, and so I love the idea of fantasy in a city setting, and so Return to Ravnica really appealed to me there.
It's what I call, like, I think of it like kind of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, when you enter a realm, a fantasy realm that's really fleshed out and multidimensional, it's just fun to kind of lose yourself and be absorbed in an environment that's totally magical and alien.
Yeah, like, I read these posts on the RPG Reddit about, like, dungeon exploring and adventuring, and, you know, I've watched, like, a lot of Acquisitions Incorporated sessions from PAX, and the idea of just going into a dungeon and exploring it and getting treasure doesn't really appeal to me. I want to, like, be alive in a world, and, like, nothing's more alive and moving around you than if you're, like, smack dab in the middle of, like, a huge city.
Yeah, like, I don't do the dungeon crawl that much.
Yeah.
In my D&D games.
We did do that one dungeon crawl that had that huge domed middle that was full of water, and I was playing as a Drefellon, and I swam through
it. Yeah, that was like
it.
A one-off thing.
Yeah, that was fun. But yeah, like, I love those moving parts. Anyway, but I got really into Magic, and I was like, I love the mechanics of Magic. How do I create a game that works like Magic but is not Magic? Because I'm not going to recreate Magic. Magic is also another game that I think it has proven itself to be a very highly... just a great clicking game. It's like Catan. It's a game that has stood the test of time and has gone through a lot of different sets and still works. Like, the base of that game is an amazing game that Richard Garfield came up with in the early 90s.
Yeah, Magic is more like a high powered sniper rifle that, like, jams 30% of the time. 30% of the time it's just gonna jam up and not work at all. But then the rest of the time it's fun to shoot.
Right. And so I wanted to create a game that took all of the elements that I love from Magic and turn it into, like, a board game. So I wanted a game that had drafting mechanics, because drafting Magic is my favorite way to play Magic, because you don't have to worry about some dude walking in with a $200 deck and destroying you. But then I love the idea, you know, there were a lot of Magic mechanics that I really like, but I also wanted to incorporate it into a board game that incorporates things from, like, Settlers of Catan, that incorporates exploration, things like I love from my favorite board game, which is Arkham Horror. So I kind of threw those into this game, and then I was like, what, I need a setting for this game, and I don't want to create a game that's about, knights and swords and sorcery. I don't want to create a game about trading in the Mediterranean. I didn't want to do any tropes that had already been tread on a lot. So I decided that I was going to set it in, like, the Pacific Northwest. And I was going to create a theme that aligned with the world that I knew. You know, write what you know. So I put together this game. It's called Fearsome Critters, The Ballad of Flapjack Swede. And I worked on it for about a year, fleshing out the rules, creating a lot of artwork, and I finally got it printed up, and now I'm in the playtest phase. And so I got to play it this week with Jesse, and I got to play one element of the game, which is kind of like the magic element of the game, with Jesse. And we really, it was so amazing to me, because I've done a couple playtest sessions, and I've gotten some good feedback, but when I sat down with you, the game became something completely different. And, like, I'm going through all this, as a game designer, I'm going through all of this for the first time. But that session with you, we really sat down and figured out a way to make this thing click a lot better than it had happened in my mind. Because if you're designing a game, it's going to be a lot of it right in your brain, and you're going to play the game in your brain 100 times.
Right.
But actually getting down and having a tangible experience with another person, just expands it so much.
You know what I think it is? It's sort of like when you have written something. Mm-hmm. And you've read it, you know, over and over, proofreading it, and then you do that step where you actually read it out loud,
mm-hmm.
and you get to a sentence, yeah. and you're like, that sentence doesn't work at all.
Right.
What? Yeah, like when I was just reading it, because you kind of knew what you're trying to get at, and it wasn't until you actually say it out loud that you're like, oh, I need to work on this part of it, and then if I move this here and do this to that, oh, now it works perfectly.
Yeah, and like I do, I have like a long history of video production, and one thing when you're producing video, you always have to be the first best representative of the audience. Like, you're always trying to look at the video for the first time every time you watch it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of easy to do when you're watching a video. Because
think? That sounds really challenging to me.
Well, it's kind of a skill that you learn over time, because if you're watching a video, you learn all of the little things. And if anything looks weird to you, it's going to look weird to somebody else. So you train yourself to like spot all of these little weird things that happen mm-hmm. in the video. But with a game, you can't do that. Because you can't play it, like, it has to be a dynamic experience with multiple people making multiple decisions at the same time.
To make another analogy here, I was listening to a podcast where comedians were talking about how do you do a bit, like, how mm-hmm. do you work on a bit, and eventually you just gotta get up on stage and do it mm-hmm. in front of a crowd, and, like, it might not work,
yeah.
and your ass might kind of be on the line there when you're, you know, representing yourself through a joke.
Right.
But the only way to really hammer it out and make it into something that kills is to get up and work on it in front of real people.
I heard a really interesting interview on – it was Mark Maron. He was talking to another comedian, and he was talking about Chris Rock's routine. And when, like, Chris Rock goes to the comedies – because, like, Chris Rock is a huge personality, and he mm-hmm. knows how to shape a joke just from the way that he tells it, that it will always create a response from the crowd. Because he's, like, a huge celebrity. He's, like, you know, he's got a solid – stand-up pedigree, resume. Like, he's been working at this for a very long time. He knows how to sell a joke. But when he goes to, like, the Comedy Cellar to work out his routine, he does everything, like, really subdued, really monotone.
Yeah.
Doesn't do, like, the Chris Rock on stage in front of 5,000 people thing.
Mm-hmm.
He just does it subdued because – and he bombs a lot because he's trying to find the gems that are funny without, like, the Chris Rock persona around it.
Right.
He wants to, like, hash that out. So
that's what you got to do for your board game.
Yeah,
get
you got
to Chris Rock to play it.
Exactly. So anyway, I'm at this point, and, like, I'm trying to figure out what to do, because when we sat down to play the game and I was kind of showing you the game, you made a comment that was like, I can't believe people are going to be playing this. And my response was, well, maybe.
Maybe.
Like, I don't know if this is something that, like, I feel like this is something that I need to focus on. And I'd love to get this thing out there. I know it's going to be a super long journey to get to that point. But the ride's been really fun and rewarding so far. I think I want to... I just want to go on this board game journey. And maybe I'll pop in and do some board game journals. But that's kind of where I'm at this point with the game.
I feel like... I don't know. Again, this is kind of a byproduct of getting older. And I think you should do this mm-hmm. For whatever you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, to take it back to stand-up comedy, for, like, a couple of seconds, I was, like, trying my hand doing stand-up and open mics and stuff.
Yeah.
And I just had a moment where I was like, I'm not going to do this. Like, I'm not going to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to do any of this, because mm-hmm. I've gotten, and I did get something out of it, going up and trying it and getting that experience. But at a certain point, I was like, well, if I'm not going to be a stand-up comedian, I'm not going to do open mic nights anymore, because it just, like, there's no point in it.
Right.
So, yeah, for you, like, if you're still getting something out of it, you totally should. But yeah. I also think that you should approach it with the idea, like, this is actually something that I want to get done and have other people, like, buy it as a product.
Well,
I think that'll make your game better if you approach it with that
absolutely.
Mentality.
And I've had that mentality from the start. Like, I've
cool.
always wanted this game to be, like, that's why I work so hard on the art. And when I show this game to people, their response is usually, I can't believe that it looks like this.
Right.
But that's just because I spent a year on the art for this game. I want it to be a game that when people play tested it, they're not playing with pieces of paper with scribbles on them.
Right.
I wanted to create a product that looks like a game so that people are excited to play test it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And I wanted to, you know, I've wanted to do this. Like, I get the most reward out of sitting down and creating something. That's why I got into video production, because when I was in eighth grade, I sat down and edited a video and spent 4 hours on it, and it felt like I spent 5 minutes doing it. And I was like, if I could do that for a job, that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that way when I'm doing graphic design or when I'm doing game design. I love to just sit down and pour myself into a process, a creative process, and get something out of it. I guess that's why we've been doing 192 podcasts.
Yeah.
No,
I feel like we're both the same way.
But I'm just ready to get something out of it. Yeah, we're both that same way, dude. And I know you're on a journey right now too with your creativity and moving on to the next level and
alcohol lobbyist.
Obviously. But I'm just excited about it. So that's kind of where I'm at with the game. I don't know. I might have some check-ins in the future. I don't know.
I want to play the full thing for sure with three or four people.
Yeah. I think it's like, I think I might, it's right now it's a 6-player game. I think I might make it a 4-player game tops.
Yeah. 3, 4. I mean,
yeah.
It always kind of sucks, like, pigeonhole your game into like two,
mm-hmm.
Two groups of numbers of people who can play it. But then again, like, base Catan, 3 or 4 players.
Right, 3 to 4 players. And then you could sell the 5 to 6 player expansion, baby.
Bam. Make that Skrilla. That's where the real money is.
Make that.
It's like how they tell comedians, like, you don't make money off the first show.
Right.
You make money off of the second show.
Uh-huh.
That night, you know?
Yep.
So it's the same thing with board games. You don't make money off of the base game. You make money off the expansion.
And I did make a game that you can make expansions for. I also want to make other games. But I think, Jesse, you and I are at points in our life where it's an exciting time, because I feel like we're at points in our life where our skill has met up with our ambition. And we're right
at
that precipice.
I agree with you on that. Yeah. It's a weird... I've been having this weird moment, like, at work, feeling like I'm not getting challenged enough at work. Yeah. I want to move on and do something else, and being like, realistically, I can do it.
Yeah.
If I apply myself, I can actually do this.
Yeah. It's an exciting time. It's also kind of scary, because at this is the point in your life where you got to do it, or else you're going to be 45 years old and you're going to be pissed off that you haven't done it.
Yeah. I agree.
Now's
That's
the
why
time.
I you regret what you never try.
That's true. That's true. Anyway, so that's I don't know what that means, but that I wanted to talk about it a little bit because I'm excited about it.
No, that's cool. I'm excited too.
All right, well, let's move on. We're going to do our Facebook roundup, but before we do, I want to talk to you about the Bald Move Network, guys. We are part of the Bald Move Network. Baldmove.com. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. It is a cluster over at that site because there's so much content, you can barely put all your ears on it. Something to appeal to everybody. There's, of course, the Game of Thrones podcast now featuring Gino, or Jim, and Aaron. God damn it. I call him Gino. That's, anyway.
I know. It got so screwed up for us.
I know, really.
Because it's like, he's not Jim to me, he's Gino. But Aaron isn't Aaron to me. It's right. Weird when people call him Aaron. I'm like, his name is Aaron. So it's like, one of them got the nickname stuck and one of them didn't.
I know, it's so weird. Anyway, Jim and Aaron are now doing the Game of Thrones podcast. That's
of course a good thing they're not superheroes.
I know. They got
we just unmasked them hard.
They got the Madman Happy Hour. That's up there. There's also the Fargo podcast, which I've been listening to. Hopefully I can jump on that podcast as a guest. They did tease me in the first episode, so it's going to happen, guys, hopefully. Of course, Up Yours Downstairs is happening right now. I believe that they are, yeah, they're still talking about Mr. Selfridges, which is Jeremy Piven's show on Masterpiece. They got the Because show. It's up there right now. Three ladies down in Southern California having a great time, drinking some wine, talking sex, politics, makeup, and everything in between. And we are on there as well. Personal Arrogance on baldmove.com. You can also get in touch with us. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 360-362-0024. Drop us an email, personalarrogance@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at Personal Podcast. We are on Facebook. We are on the Bald Move Facebook page and the Personal Arrogance Facebook page. We've been getting a bunch of likes at Personal Arrogance Facebook page. We love it when you do that. That community gets bigger and bigger every day. So join that. You can also rate and review us on iTunes, which is amazing. And you could tell a friend if you can't do any of that. I know you all have mouths. It would be hard not to. So tell a friend, friends. And if you do like us on Facebook, each week we post the Facebook roundup on there. We say, hey, we're recording. What do you want us to talk about? You tell us, and we talk about it. First one, Aquaman or Namor? This one's easy.
Namor, for sure. Submariner.
Yep. Up next, we got Green Lantern or Silver Surfer?
I don't really care.
I'm going to go John Stewart Green Lantern with the Vietnam vet background. That one's the best. Matthew says, would you rather be able to shoot spaghetti out of your fingertips with precise accuracy or fart spaghetti with enough propulsion to fly? The spaghetti is perfectly edible in both cases.
Definitely, definitely fart fly spaghetti.
Me too. It's bad. I mean, does it smell? Does it smell like spaghetti? I don't know. There's too many questions, Matthew. Priscilla says, ah, guys, I'm 2 weeks delayed and I just finished hearing the bar idea. In Kalamazoo, Michigan, they have a bar where all the beers are on stock exchange, like on a stock exchange like board, and every 15 minutes the prices change. They also have stock market crashes, and that $8 beer becomes 95 cents. I heard about a bar in Germany that was like this too.
I don't want it to be arbitrary pricing, yeah, though. I want it to be actually based off of a supply and demand economic.
And that should make sense for your kegs too.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to
move the older ones.
We need an algorithm. Robert says, casting is pretty much set for the new Star Wars movie, and they are doing prelim location shots. I'm pumped. Wonder if you guys are excited and what you think the plot may be for the new movie. It's okay if Grandpa isn't excited, but I thought half of you may be interested. Which one of us, Grandpa?
I guess I am?
I'm technically older than you.
That is true. You're not technically older than me. You are older than me.
But Jesse, I know how much you hate Star Wars, so...
Well, you know, I think my opinion, I've stated it before, it can't get any worse.
Exactly.
So I'm fine with the new Star Wars films.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think, where the whole... That speaks for the whole podcast. Run this shit into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, there's nowhere to go but up from where the series went.
Yeah, and apparently Luke, Leia, and Han are all going to be in it as oldie moldies. Maybe that's the grandpa you was talking about.
Mm.
So I'm all for it. Let's see what JJ's up to. I'm excited about it, too. Sean says, Palcohol's approval is the obvious suggestion for a topic. We did that. James says, thought you would appreciate an article on minor league baseball teams brewing their own beer. I'm tired of people stealing ideas from this podcast. I think we need our own Supreme Court case.
Yeah. People versus minor league baseball. Can we represent the people?
Yeah, exactly. Matt says, embarrassing music guilty pleasure. Maybe you love Chumbawamba. Maybe you and Miley wanted to party in the USA, or perhaps you rocked the Spice Girls secretly with your Walkman. What's yours? Let the world know. I will say that Chumbawamba Tub Thumping was the first CD I ever bought in sixth grade.
Nice.
I like that
song, that Teenage Dirtbag song.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably guilty pleasure.
That's not a terrible song.
I like it.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. Adam says, remember the console wars of the early 90s, Nintendo versus Sega, in an all-out marketing battle. You guys should channel your inner Don Draper and come up with early 90s console war style ads for next-gen systems. This one's tough.
I don't really remember the early 90s.
I was literally like 7.
Yeah.
I do remember shoe-based cartoons starring MC Hammer. But the other part about this is there's no way.
That's so wild.
The other part about this is that I can't channel Dom Draper. He's just too damn charming. Doesn't work.
Yeah, I also don't watch that show, so like I'm 0 for 2 on this goof.
I do like the sentiment, Adam, though. Thank you for sending
it. But Sega dick ass. Is that close?
I think that's exactly right. The roaring 90s. Angela says, can Roger Dotsy be a third co-host sometimes? He's pretty hilarious.
No, he has to do the dental cast.
I love it.
So it'll be, we're both going to get our teeth worked on. So it'll be Dr. Dotsy, and then one of us in the chair, and then the other one co-hosting, but then we swap at the break.
I just love the idea of Roger Dotsy doing the Dotsy dental cast, but it's him and whoever is in his chair on laughing gas.
Yeah. No, that's good, too.
And every once in a while, he does a root canal in the middle.
Oh.
Aaron says, oh, who's this Aaron guy? He says, so I was making hamburgers and I accidentally undercooked the meat. Not grossly so, but I'd say the burger was a solid medium on the doneness. The boiga was a solid medium on the doneness scale. And it was the best goddamn burger I've had in recent memory. Now, I hear a lot of talk on the dangers of undercooked ground beef, but I'd like to ask Jesse, as a resident Burger King, how seriously should I take this in light of the deliciousness of a medium-cooked booger? Burger! Is there a point of diminishing returns like medium rare? What is the sweet spot? And just how bad is Mad Cow anyway?
Well, Aaron, I usually, like, when I go out and order a burger at a restaurant, yeah. I get a medium anyway.
Yeah, me too.
I thought medium was kind of like the go-to burger cookedness.
What's wrong with pink in the middle?
No, it should be a little pink in the middle, not bloody. That said, one time, I worked a hard day work, went to a restaurant, ordered a burger rare.
Yep.
Super bloody. Loved it. Very delicious.
Yeah, I've had a rare burger as well. Not to mention, I'm a big fan of steak tartare.
Yeah. So I would just say at home, just buy a meat thermometer. Like, if you're really interested in cooking medium or medium rare burgers, get a steak or a meat thermometer. But unlike steak, I don't know that like medium rare is going to be much better. It's all like ground up beef anyway, so it's not like the center is going to be all succulent and nice.
Yeah, and I'm not too worried about disease from beef.
No.
Like, in general. I mean, I know you could get E. coli, but you're probably not going to get E. coli from USDA prime ground beef burger.
Just get a meat thermometer.
Yeah, just get it. It's good. You should be putting some pink in the middle, man. Not every burger needs to be a hard hockey puck.
Know what I did the other day, actually?
What?
I made a patty, and then I like kind of scooped out the middle of it, so there was a hole. It was like donut shaped, and then I cooked an egg in the middle of it.
Oh my god! You made an egg in a nest with beef.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's my signature breakfast.
See, I've heard that you called it that. I heard it called a one-eyed jack before.
Egg in a nest. That's like the British term.
One-Eyed Jack, man. We live in America.
I guarantee you One-Eyed Jack is the Australian bastardization.
No. I learned that from an American.
Who went to Australia and ate one?
No.
I feel like this guy thinks he invented it. That's what I think happened. Anyway, Aaron says, or not Aaron, but Aaron says, the voice, Walquist, we need to discuss the voice. Unfortunately, I don't watch past the audition rounds. Can't stand the duels, can't stand all of the Carson Daly. So audition rounds and done. Rollo Tomasi, the greatest name in fandom, says, Jesse should get a third reco every week. Number one can always be Tasha's Pottery. I've been listening to the back catalog, and when you guys were discussing Russell Nisha's first view of Jesse upon emerging from the wound, was clean shaven, mustached, or beard? Which one was it? I have been losing sleep.
I can't remember. I think it was mustachioed.
Straight up mustache. I feel like it takes a while. Like, my dad always had a mustache when I was a kid, and now he doesn't, and it's kind of weird. He's got a weird upper lip. But
turtle lip.
I think it takes a while for you to ingrain that in your mind of what your father looks like. Levi says, here's how koalas run, and sent us a gift. A gift of them running. That's nice. D says, Aaron Mad Cow takes years to kick in, YOLO. That's how I cook meat, is with a YOLO mentality. And then finally, Jesse says, Palcohol, that means we covered everything this week, Jesse. What's your first recommendation?
I've been playing this app on my Kindle called Tiny Death Star.
Uh-huh.
And
you,
like, control, like, a little Death Star, and the dudes run around in it, and it's all cute and fun, so.
Tiny Death Star.
Tiny Death Star.
My first recommendation this week is also going to be an app. I have been playing the Magic Duels of the Planeswalker. Surprise, surprise.
Really?
And I get a lot of enjoyment out of it. It is a great way to get rid of a bus ride. of course, Magic Duels of the Planeswalkers. Pick that up. Seco Reco.
I don't know. Buy some Easter candy half off.
And then my Sekoreko will be a movie that I just watched this week. It was The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It wasn't... If I bought this movie ticket, I'd be a little mad, but since it was a rental, it went down smooth. Secret Life of Walter Mitty, you could get it, rent it, watch it, and have a good weeknight. That's all I'm saying. And that's our show for this week. Thank you so much for listening to another hour and a half of the Personal Arrogance Podcast. Remember that until next time, wherever you go...
And whatever you do...
Please... Stay
arrogant. Arrogant.